tell us who you are and how long you've been in the industry.
Okay, so Christine James, Vice President Canada, Travel Leaders Network, over 40 years into business, and 24 years this year with Travel Leaders Network.
Welcome to Voices of Travel, The Next Chapters, an interview series that captures the passion, humor, and character of 15 remarkable people as they tell us the stories of their careers in the industry. Welcome, Christine. I'm curious, what was your first job in travel?
So my first job was while I was in my final year in college, travel and tourism, and I was doing my apprenticeship at Thomas Cook in fashionable Yorkville, in downtown Toronto. When I started that job, the branch manager obviously was very protective of his high-end clientele that, you know, were very accustomed to the high level of service. So when I started my five-week placement, he said to me, "You're not allowed to speak directly to any of our clients. You know, you can watch and listen at when a real consultant speaks to them. And of course, you can stamp brochures." They did have brochures back then. I followed his instructions, and then on a very busy February afternoon, our waiting room was full of clients, and there was a couple that was just about to walk out because they didn't have the time to wait. So I walked over and offered my assistance, brought them to my desk, and ended up selling them 2 return tickets to London, 3 nights at a high-end hotel in London, a 21-day coach tour of Britain. So my very angry branch manager walked over to me at the end of that transaction. He said, "I thought I told you that you were not supposed to speak to clients directly." So I simply handed him my booking file and I said, "There you go." I said, "These people were about to walk out and I just made you X number of dollars." So needless to say, that was my last day of stamping brochures all day.
Who was your mentor? Who was the person who had the biggest influence on your career, and how did they influence it?
Absolutely. My mentor actually was 7 years later. I was working at Travel Trust International. And if anybody remembers that, they were a corporate travel consortia. And I was reporting to Patrice Bell, I'm sure a name that many knew in this industry. She was my VP. And she was definitely my mentor. I mean, not only was she a brilliant leader, but she always never forgot to give credit where credit was due. In fact, I'll never forget the day I walked back into my office after lunch. She handed me a message from a prospect I'd been working on for a few months. It was a large network in Quebec. And she said, "Romeo," that was the name of the president, "he's decided to join our network. And he thinks you're wonderful. P.S., so do I." And to this day, every time I need a boost or I'm feeling a little bit down, I save that note and I take it out and I read it. I mean, she was a true mentor, supporter of women. And again, you know, always giving credit. She was tough. She was extremely organized, you know, and very strategic in her management skills. But I learned so much from her. And on a personal note, I have to give credit to my dear mother, who was a school teacher by profession. And she ran her own private kindergarten school and raised not one, not two, not three, not five, but 9 children, and did it and made it sound so easy. And she did it back in the day when women were, you know, not breadwinners, let alone, you know, they were the real they were not working, let alone breadwinners in their family. So she was a true trailblazer. So I graduated from high school. I was not even 16 yet. So I didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up because I hadn't quite grown up yet. And that's when I took my time off and I worked, you know, in a full-time job for actually a year and a half. Well, I made my decision. I was just happened to be flipping through a career magazine and found this program on travel. And I thought, like, what a great way to combine, you know, what I love, my passion for travel and dealing with clients. And I was working actually in that job as in customer service. So it was a perfect combination of what my passion was.
Christine, I'm hoping you can paint people a picture of what the industry was like 30 or 40 years ago, because it really was a different world.
Absolutely, Bob. I mean, it's changed so drastically, as we know. Number one, when I think back at airfares, okay, we did have the old Resivac clunker computer, which, you know, most consultants today would know what that meant, but it was a form of the first evolution of a computer, a booking computer, which is powered by Air Canada. But you actually could quote a fare off a printed fare sheet. I mean, that's how simple it was. We had four fare classes for domestic travel. And of course, I mean, all the mass market suppliers offered 15% commission at sources to any agency of any size. So you mean, you know, clients could walk in and you knew that you could probably offer them a decent discount because you had that guaranteed revenue you were making on the back end. So it certainly has changed. I mean, you still needed to know a lot about, you know, destinations and, you know, vaccinations and visa requirements. And of course, it was harder because you didn't have the internet. So everything had to be done by either picking up the phone or reading an actual book. So, you know, it has evolved and, you know, changed for the many, many, many ways better. But I still think today, when I look at our network and I look at our advisors, I mean, it is just so complex now. And the biggest challenge, of course, is because of the internet, consumers are far more educated. So when they come for services of a travel advisor, they think they know better. Of course, most of the time they don't, but it's that, you know, preconception that they know because they found it on the internet.
How has the retail travel agency business changed? There were the mom and pops back in the day, and then the consortiums. Can you walk me through the kinds of changes that have happened on the agency side? Consortia have gone from being accused of being commission clubs to now being marketing organizations.
When I joined Travel Leaders back in 1999, it was vacation.com at the time. The commission club concept was still a very significant driver as to why what you call the mom and pops would motivate them to join a consortia. So, I mean, the key benefit, you know, was, of course, that high-level commission at source. So if you joined a consortia, whether it be ours or one of our competitors, you know, you would be guaranteed that higher level of the commission right at source. So that would really be have a significant impact in your revenue. And, of course, you're still able to maintain your ownership, independent ownership, ma and pa. But even at that time, I remember when I joined the company, you know, we were very much vested in education, training, and even marketing. So we were evolving, you know, as early as 2000, 2001, beyond the commission club concept. I think our owners saw the future and they saw that the commission club model was not sustainable. And you had to look beyond. Because I do remember launching our, you know, direct mail marketing program back in 2000. And that was, and we were executing actually at a pretty sophisticated level. You know, where we would secure the databases from our membership and then negotiate with the suppliers for marketing funds and then execute on their behalf, do all the printing and the demographic, you know, background work on it to make sure we were talking to the right client when we sent a mailer out. And but what's, you know, changed probably is the technology aspect. I mean, you know, clearly when I joined the company back in 1999, 2000, even going forward and maybe up to 2004, we really didn't have our own technology, you know, programs to offer solutions where we had a full technology team, which was one of our largest departments. I think second to marketing, our technology team is our deepest team. But, you know, we were using, even at that time, we were using third-party technology solutions because we realized technology was something that was, you know, going to happen, and we couldn't avoid it. In order to move forward, we had to, you know, really invest, even if it was third party, in finding those solutions to meet the demand.
The 1990s were a decade of fear for the travel agency business. You had the arrival of the internet, agents were going to be disintermediated, and the supplier relationships were rather rocky. The airlines cut commissions to agents. Did that help drive the growth and the maturing of the consortia?
Yes, let's face it. you know, there was doom and gloom predicted in our industry. I remember back in the, when, as you said, introduction of the internet, you know, when there were doom and gloomers were saying that the travel agent was going to be obsolete. I mean, even today, when I'm out shopping and running my errands and I talk to someone in a store, or someone that's, you know, doing my hair, they think, oh, are travel agencies still around? I mean, there was that prediction that it was going to be that fall of the industry. And I think that, and again, you mentioned about, you know, airlines starting to cut commissions. I think what that forced industry to do is look for other revenue opportunities. So we know the airlines, you're going to be limited on your earning power at airlines. So let's talk about, you know, cruising. Let's talk about touring. Let's talk about opportunities where we actually have, you know, a better chance of increasing our profits and revenues. And then you supplement that with like the marketing technology pieces, and then you're adding and increasing your client base. So, you know, obviously you have to be more creative. It's just like with COVID, it forced so many of us to be more creative. And as a bad incident it was, I think a lot of good things came out of it. You know, for example, you know, it taught a lot of us that we could survive, we could run our businesses, albeit we still prefer to be in person. We're able to function in a virtual environment. And I think that anything that forces you out of your comfort zone and makes you look at better ways to make money is a good thing.
Well, let's talk about some of those events, because there certainly have been a lot over the course of both of our careers. Economic ups and downs, two Gulf Wars, Y2K, 9/11, SARS 1 and 2, and of course, COVID-19. Can you talk about how external forces are really the biggest threat to the industry and how the industry responds to these kinds of threats?
I think that external forces obviously are beyond our control. You know, no one can control a pandemic. You know, no one can control a political environment that triggers uncertainty in any part of the world. And that has clearly impact on our business. But I think that if we can sort of prepare ourselves for the next incident, but I think that, yeah, obviously these factors are beyond our control, and the best way we can survive is coming up with ways of which we can get to the other side and be more creative. Because, you know, there's really nothing we can do to avoid it. You know, I'm hoping that we'll never have a pandemic incident like we had with COVID. Again, it certainly was the most significant pandemic in my career. I do remember SARS because I was around in the industry. But even, you know, when SARS came and, you know, there was a prediction it was going to have a longer impact on our industry, it really didn't.
So has the industry learned something from COVID? I mean, I know it's still in recent memory, but I'm wondering if travel agents have learned something that will help them as they move forward.
Well, I can speak to our advisors and what they learned and how we supported them to get to that learning stage is that, you know, we knew that obviously COVID was going to be a longer run. And we knew that in order to, you know, not only survive it, but come back and actually thrive and do better, you know, we had to find a place where we knew that consumers would need the advisors even more than they needed us before COVID. So our focus has been on luxury travel, because our luxury numbers have gone up exponentially. Yes, our mass market numbers have increased substantially. I mean, our numbers are far exceeding 2019, and 2019 was a magnificent year in the business. So our numbers have exceeded 2019 overall. But when I look at the growth, it's in the luxury space. Because I think consumers are realizing that there is no way, and when you're investing that kind of money on a luxury vacation, you need a real person. And you need the trust. It's a trust factor involved. And, you know, that is why that business has really increased.
I wanted to circle back to an earlier part of our conversation, Christine. You mentioned your mother and you mentioned Patrice Bell. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about diversity, equity, and inclusiveness. What was the industry like in this area when you started? How has it progressed, and where does it need to go? What are some of your observations on this?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking that, Bob. And, you know, when I think back to when I started, you know, my career, you know, back in the late 70s, I think we have progressed in that area. Are we where we need to be? Absolutely not. So I did some research, and these are current statistics. And so you probably noticed, but 55% of our industry are women. And even though we represent that striking percentage, only 20% of the women in, I'm talking about our industry, are actually in management positions, and only 8% are in executive positions. And of the 8% of the executive positions, they're still making 63 cents on the dollar. Like, what's wrong with that? You know, we're working, we're doing the same job. And, you know, so our industry, you know, I was thinking that, you know, geez, the general industry is, you know, behind the eight ball with that in terms of equity. You know, it's bad enough that we're not representative on the executive level, but when we do get there, why are we only making 63 cents on the dollar? You know, that that statistic I could have accepted back in the 70s. I find that a really tough pill to swallow today, in today's environment.
So where's the leverage? Where's the ability to change? I'm not sure whether attitudes is the right word, but definitely policies. How should the industry solve this?
We need more women in executive positions who are at that level to make those significant policy changes is what we need. And if I can give any advice to any women, either in this industry or looking to advance, is support your fellow sister. Like, I think that women traditionally, not all women, but still a good percentage of women do not support their fellow sisters. And if they do, we would all get there. We're stronger together than we are apart. Everybody knows that.
Maybe this is a stupid question, but isn't there a network of women in this industry that talk amongst themselves about ways to solve the problem?
And that's a terrific idea. If I had more time, I'd probably volunteer to lead that. but we do have that in Internova. Internova is Travel Leaders' parent company, and we have a Women of Internova, which we rolled out, actually was during COVID. And so every month it's via Zoom. So we even invite men to join the call. But we invite women leaders, you know, women who are holding executive positions within our cruise lines and tour operator space. And it's a 1 hour session, and we have a keynote speaker, and then we have a Q&A, and then we break into little breakout rooms where we can talk to each other. Because a lot of us, of course, because we are an international company, we're in 86 countries, you know, we don't meet everybody within the Internova organization. So it's a great opportunity to sort of network with other women when we have that breakout, and then we come together. And, you know, it's not always the subject matter that's covered by the keynote. It's not always industry related. You know, for example, last year we had a wellness coach come on, and she did like a 20-minute session, like of how to just relax and take a break from the pressure. And we also talk to women about, you know, work-life balance, that because we're working so hard to get where we need to be, a lot of women who have young families feel guilty. Because men have never had to, and that's the other problem, men have never had to go through that guilt.
What about the industry associations? Do they have any initiatives in play?
Yeah, you know what I missed, because I was flying back from Chicago, we had our advisory board meeting, so I missed the Toronto. I'm going out to Vancouver next week because I've been asked to sit on the industry panel by Wendy. But as far as I can see in their existing curriculum at ACT, I don't see anything specific. You know, to building, they do a lot of great, I mean, of course, on the advocacy side, just generally speaking, moving our industry forward. I think they do a fantastic job. Unless I'm missing it, I haven't seen anything specific to, you know, for address to women and equality in the industry.
But in an industry where the majority is women, the opportunities should be greater, shouldn't they?
Yes. And you look at the cruise line industry. I mean, yes, you've got VPs, but how many CEOs do you see? And there's a lot of cruise lines out there, so.
TDC Transat is a good example of women in senior roles. They've got a lot of women in executive positions.
Yeah, and I see that Travel Brands also announced some executive promotions, and it was predominantly female, which is really nice to see. So, I mean, I don't think that you should just promote somebody because they're female, but I believe if they have the skill set and the capability, and you do promote them, I mean, they shouldn't have to fight longer to get that promotion. They should certainly be making the same salary. So,
changing it up a bit, I wanted to go back to technology and get you to talk about artificial intelligence, something everyone is talking about, both inside and outside the industry. And I'm wondering how you see AI impacting on the travel industry.
Well, funny you should ask. We invited an expert on AI to address our top members. And the message was you need to embrace it because it is such a great, it's a great tool. You still have to fact check it because the databases for most AI tools only go back to 2021. So for example, if you ask it for your best restaurant in Chicago, which I was just at, and they give you a list, then that restaurant could have closed since 2021. So you do have to fact check it. But what it's great for example, as you know, Bob, we launched a number of years ago our lead generation tool, okay, where we are sending leads of new clients to our advisors. And as I said, you know, many of our advisors are great at selling travel. They don't necessarily know how to sell themselves. And so the beauty of AI when they are writing their bio is they can write, you know, a basic bio, you know, feed it into AI and say, come up with something, you know, longer, you know, 50 words, or make it warm and friendly, or, you know, or make it sound like me. I mean, it's incredible. I've tested it and it's instantaneous. So, I mean, you can use it for a number of reasons. We had one of our advisory board members yesterday who creates a lot of her custom tours. And she, you know, has this tour she put together, very basic, you know, the logistics components of the tour. But, you know, AI framed it in a really nice way that, you know, got her the exposure over her social media that she needed to promote, market, and sell that tour.
So don't be afraid. Educate yourself.
That's right. Yeah. And in fact, we are investing travel leaders with one of the AI providers to integrate it into our intranet site so that our members that want to take advantage of it don't need to pay for it. We're going to pay for it. We're going to fund that for a year, see what the pickup is like. But just get our members that are a bit fearful of it, and it's something new to test it. But instead of fearing it, you've got to use it to your advantage. Because everybody else is. I mean, our suppliers are using it. So for you to maintain your level of competitive edge, you need to embrace it and use it for all its good value.
I also wanted to ask you about sustainability. I believe the last time your senior executives were up in Canada, I was talking to them about sustainability. And based on the last summer, with the severe weather, heat, floods, rains, I'm wondering how much do agents need to educate themselves on sustainability?
You know, the sustainability issue is definitely here. I think the driving factor is that their clients are asking about it. So if their clients are asking about it, then they need to be able to respond. And I think that the suppliers need to take maybe a more active responsibility. I think a lot of them, I mean, I know that, you know, the adventure tour companies like G Adventures, for example, you know, they have been preaching the sustainability model for many years. I mean, because that really fits very nicely with our model. And because, again, their tours are smaller, they're going into remote areas. Again, in terms of the economic sustainability within the regions that they travel, then they're employing local people, like all their tour guides are local. You know, the people that do their transfers are local. So I think that's been part of their DNA. I think, and I know it's not an easy solution and it's not going to happen overnight. But I think if you care at all about our planet, everybody has to focus more on it, right? So, but it's not going to something, as I said, it's going to take some time.
Climate change could well change the travel patterns that the industry has been accustomed to over the years.
And, you know, it's really interesting because when I look at my forward bookings, you know, typically the Europe season in a traditional year, Europe season would be all but over, right, by the end of this month. And because of the climate change that's impacted the high temperatures in Europe, people are now booking for Q4 for Europe because it is a more comfortable time of year to go. It's still, I mean, if it's in the 40s now, it's still going to be perfect touring temperatures in October and well into November. In fact, many of our top account events that we've hosted over the years have been in the October timeframe, November timeframe. So, you know, it's a great time because also there's less people, right? Wherever you're going, you're not dealing with hundreds of people trying to get into a high demand attraction. So there's so many benefits, but I think that if we're gonna again use something that's a negative, and I was reading the other day, we've had the hottest July on the planet ever since we started recording the weather. I mean, that's significant. But I think that if you're gonna take something again out of your control, I mean, it's certainly out of my control, that, you know, then you turn it into positive and you say to your clients, look, you know, I don't blame you. You didn't wanna go to Italy when it was 48 degrees. But you're still going to have a very pleasant experience if you go in October. And the airfares are going to be less.
So someone comes to you. They're thinking of getting into the travel business. What kind of advice would you have for them? Would you tell them to come on in or would you tell them to run the other way?
I would not turn them away. I mean, obviously, it's not all about going on free trips because the free trips don't exist like they used to back at the time when I joined the company. But it is a very rewarding career. And I think now with the evolution of the host agency model, what's happening is that's giving a lot of people out there who are looking not only getting into the beginning of their career, but as a second career. You know, you have a lot of retired teachers or people in the banking business that are now looking to having a career. They love travel and they've traveled a lot. So that's great. And I look at our top host agency members, and they're actually looking for independent contractors actually outside the industry that have the selling skills, that have traveled halfway around the world, that are passionate about the travel industry, and they're doing really well. So I think there certainly is an opportunity for new people starting out their career as well as a second career. For those who are semi-retired. And of course, during COVID, you know, that forced a lot of people into early retirement. And they may not necessarily want to go back to their previous job, but they still want to do something. And it gives them that flexibility of doing something they love and working on their own hours.
In the next decade, what do you see as the industry's greatest challenge? What does it have to do to meet that challenge? In the next decade, what do you see as the industry's greatest opportunity?
Well, if I had that crystal ball, I wouldn't be sitting here. you asked me 10 years ago what the industry looked like, and I probably would have given you an incorrect prediction, other than to say that I didn't believe all the doom and gloom about the extinction of the travel advisor. I didn't believe that. And I don't believe that will happen still. In 10 years from now, yes, we'll evolve. You know, you talk about technology. So what Travel Leaders has done is invested heavily on the development of our technology solutions. Because I believe that especially when we get new entrants into the market, into the industry, they are going to demand that high level technology to execute and be successful with their bookings. So I think that technology will continue to play a major role. I think organizations like Travel Leaders will continue to invest in that technology to make it more seamless, to make it easier that anybody who is even outside of the industry can still use it, and it's very user-friendly.
Now, Christine, I've asked you a lot of questions, but is there something that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
All I can say to advisors out there who are in the business, who have maybe just started in the business recently, or thinking about getting into the business. So I would just say, you know, I still think it's a great business. Heck, if I didn't think so, I wouldn't still be here after 40 years in the business. So obviously there must be some attraction. Have we had challenges? You know, but they say what challenges us makes us stronger. So I have to believe that.
Thanks for telling us your story, Christine. And thanks to all of you for joining me for this episode. I'm Bob Mowat, Executive Editor of Canadian Travel Press. And I hope you'll join me for another remarkable conversation on Voices of Travel, the next chapters.